Doom do 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 do. Hi, plant people. Welcome to episode 58 of
Bloom and Grow Radio.
Hi, plant friends. I hope you have had wonderfully planty weeks as per usual. I'm so thankful to all of you guys who have supported the launch of the Plant Friends Apparel line, which is the Bloom and Grow Radio line of planty apparel inspired by things we talk about on Bloom and Grow Radio. So you've got Plant Lady, Botanical Bro, Keep Blooming, Keep Growing, shirts, sweatshirts, and accessories. It's been so fun seeing what you guys are getting. I can't wait to see you rocking them IRL or on Instagram. If you want to check out what we have to offer, you can click the link in the show notes. Also, announcement for you San Diego-based listeners, we will be doing the second live taping of Bloom and Grow Radio at Barrels and Branches Nursery in Encinitas on April 20th with Raquel from Infinite Succulents. So we're going to be doing a DIY succulent crown tutorial live for the podcast. So everybody who comes is going to be able to make a succulent crown in the event alongside of me as Raquel walks me through the creation of a succulent crown for the episode. You'll be making them alongside us. We'll also have some cocktails, some snacks. It's going to be super fun on the morning of April 20th. Link in the show notes to get your tickets. Come hang out. It'll be a ton of fun. I'm so excited to welcome Summer Rain Oaks of Homestead Brooklyn back on the show. She's one of my favorite recurring guests that we have. For those of you that don't know her, she's the genius behind the Homestead Brooklyn brand. She lives in the most epic indoor jungle in Brooklyn with, I think she's over like 800 plants now. And she has a degree in environmental science from Cornell. She is also the plant lady behind the Plant One On Me YouTube channel, which is so fun and unbelievable. We're so lucky to have her back on the show to talk about an issue we have all probably run into: finding a plant you love at a garden shop or a nursery, and you go to check the name tag to see what it is, and there isn't one. Or maybe it's a house plant, bright indirect light, like when you don't have any information on the plant that you want to take home. And it's an issue because we have learned throughout these episodes of Bloom and Grow Radio that one of the most important things we can do as plant parents is to understand what kind of light and humidity our homes get and to bring home plants that will thrive in our unique indoor environments. So how the heck are you supposed to do this if you don't know what the plant is and what kind of care it needs? I know this is an issue that I've personally come across. I know several of you have written to me asking to make an episode about this, and I thought Summer Rain would be the perfect person to chat about the general clues that we could get from just looking at a plant that might lead us to a general idea of the light and care it would need. Now, disclaimer about this episode, obviously, we're speaking in generalities here. There's always going to be an exception to the rule, but it's great for us to arm ourselves with as much general knowledge as possible. And also something we talk about today to zoom out and understand the bigger picture about plants and nature in general. Summer Rain has also recently launched an amazing online houseplant masterclass, which I personally have taken, and we chat about my experience taking it at the end of the episode. Before I bring this lovely planty chat with a plant friend that I love to you, I wanted to tell you about a company I am loving and the sponsor of today's episode, Mountain Crest Gardens. If you are looking to add succulents to your collection this growing season, look no further than mountaincrestgardens.com for the best place to buy amazing succulents online. Plant Friends, Mountain Crest Gardens is a family-owned and operated succulent nursery in California that's been around for 2 decades and has over 10,000 five-star reviews to back them up. And let me tell you, I'm one of them. They sent me a package of succulents, which you can see in my pinned Instagram stories unboxing, and I was absolutely blown away by the insane variety of the incredibly healthy succulents that Mountain Crest Gardens has to offer, as well as their environmentally friendly mission. All their packing materials are biodegradable or recyclable, I absolutely love that about them. I also absolutely love that I was able to get one of the plants that's been on my wish list for a while, the Haworthia retusa, which is that amazing, dreamy looking Haworthia that has translucent windows in its leaves that actually are built in to tolerate low light conditions. You can learn more about the Haworthia retusa or tons of other succulents on Mountain Crest Gardens website as well. So Mountain Crest Gardens is offering Bloom and Grow Radio listeners 15% off your first purchase with them by heading to mountaincrestgardens.com/bloom to get your personalized discount code for 15% off. Once again, that's mountaincrestgardens.com/bloom where you will find your personal discount code for 15% off. All right, here's summer rain. Summer Rain, welcome back to Bloom and Grow Radio.
I'm so happy to be back, Maria. Thanks for inviting me back.
Yay. And since your last visit to Bloom and Grow, you've launched your houseplant masterclass, which I'm totally obsessed with. Congratulations.
Thank you. It was a lot of work, but I'm happy that it's out. And now it requires just taking people's feedback and rejiggering some sections here and there. But it's great. It's a live process in my mind. So it's a fun process.
It's an evergreen course.
Indeed, it is in all sense of the word.
And I can't wait to talk to you more about that. But I'm happy to have you on the show today. It feels a little full circle to me because I remember your first plant swap that I attended was before I knew anything about plants, before I had launched the podcast. And I didn't know how to propagate. So I went to a garden center. I was upstate camping and I went to this random garden center and I knew I had to pick up some plants to bring to the plant swap, but the garden center didn't have any tags in any of the plants. And also my knowledge was so small at that point. Even if there were tags, I wouldn't really know what they were. So I just like grabbed the prettiest looking plants that I could find and brought them to the plant swap. And I kept one for myself, which was, I think it was a caladium that I had kept for myself and almost like immediately killed it because I didn't know how to care for it. I put it like so far from my window. It's hysterical, like how poorly I set this plant up for success. But it's an issue sometimes for us to go to a garden center, go to a big box store, or maybe even just have a friend gift a plant and have us not know what it is and maybe not have the plant tag to kind of educate us. So I'd love for you to help me understand how I could better observe plants and kind of understand what they are without having to give it a Google.
Yeah, I love this topic of conversation because, you know, coming from the world of being a naturalist and having to go outside and just observe whether it's plants or animals or birds or insects or fungus or whatever it may be, you know, naturally in those environments, you don't have tags. You don't have like a little bird with a little tag like hanging from its wing or from its foot and then saying, oh, you know, that must be a ruby-throated hummingbird or whatever it might be. So I really love this because it's introducing, as you said, observation back to kind of the consumer or the houseplant enthusiast, if you will, which is really interesting to do because I think if we're not necessarily always trained to observe in a more critical or analytical way, maybe the only thing that we're observing is that like, oh, as you said, I went to go and pick some of the prettiest plants. And so maybe we're just looking at it from a beauty standpoint. And that is like one level of observation. But, you know, just in the same way that we might observe like a person's behavior or something along those lines, it's other layers of observation, I think, that comes to it when actually like looking at a plant or plants for the first time.
Yeah, it's only one piece of the pie, like one little layer. And there are so many other layers we can enjoy.
Yeah, exactly. And in many ways, I think that it's okay to not have a plant tag because I've been in some situations, and so have you probably, you know, after these many, many months or year of you doing this, that you've gone into situations sometimes in whether it's a big box store or it's a smaller nursery, and sometimes things are even mislabeled. So sometimes, or they're so generically labeled that it could kind of maybe make you stray in the wrong direction or give you kind of bad advice. So that idea of being able to, you know, kind of at least have that first observational prowess when it comes to a plant, I think is super critical and actually a lot of fun because when you could start to intuit what the plant may need, or maybe how it grows in its native habitat is actually quite fun and allows you to kind of like increase your, you know, observational chops, if you will, when it comes to certain plants. So, you know, if it doesn't have a tag in it, like don't fret. I know people want like the name of a plant like almost immediately so they could Google to, you know, see a little bit more detailed care tips about that particular plant. And that's just totally natural. But I think, you know, one of the things that I cover in the Houseplant Masterclass, and I think it's, for me, it's like one of my favorite sections, is just like, how do we actually step back, look at what that plant has, and intuit a little bit more about its particular needs, which I hope is like what we'll accomplish a little bit here today.
At the end of the day, it really is just about empowering yourself to trust yourself more than that care tag, because that's totally been, I've totally had the wrong care tag in my plant. Or when your care tag just says houseplant, medium light, you know, and there's not much. So I love the idea that this is going to help us be able to trust ourselves as plant people better than just relying on our external resources.
Yeah, exactly. And it goes back to even like the tests that you take in school. Memorization is one thing, but actually learning how to solve a problem, whether there's like a, you know, mealybug outbreak like within your home, or whether you're getting, you know, increasing amounts of yellowing leaves or what it might be, you want to be in a position where you don't necessarily always have to go to Google or to ask your, like,
totally,
you know, plant guru or anything along those lines about what to do. Like, you'd want to be able to, you know, think about it through for yourself. I think that's, for me, like the ultimate goal, even with the masterclass, is to help people think for themselves. I know a lot of us like want to be told what to do. I actually spoke with a woman who was just like, just tell me what to do. And I'm like, I get that. I really do. Because a lot of us don't want to take the time to actually observe. But I think that if we find the joy in the observation, then that actually is really exciting. And one thing I would want to mention is that when you do walk into a store, especially if you're going into a big box store, because you'd mentioned going into a big box store, you know, a lot of those plants naturally are ones that are kind of like tough as nails, or they're tougher than nails, because a lot of those plants have to go through the rigor of like neglect and sitting on the shelf for a long time. And in some cases, in some of the big box stores, and I'm not saying all, you know, a lot of the folks are not necessarily trained to care for plants, or if they are trained mm-hmm. to care for plants, they're not always trained to care for plants well. And so those plants sitting on the shelves, you could probably already intuit that these are ones that are a little bit more resilient, if you will. And they're probably chosen, you know, so that they could sit on the shelf for maybe a slightly longer time and could handle like miswatering or underwatering. And that means that you're probably only getting a smaller selection of houseplants than you typically would maybe at a more specialty nursery. Those are things, those are observational things that are kind of like outside of observing, like maybe the stems or the leaves of plants, that I just want to kind of throw out there, because you're already kind of getting like a selection of plants given to you because of that.
Yeah. And they're also probably already stressed.
Yeah.
Because they are resilient and they have probably sat on a truck for a while and then sat indoors with improper light. So that's a good way to at least go into that shopping experience to understand. So if you bring that plant home, it's going to probably have to go through a little bit of a adjustment period, no matter what type of plant it is.
Exactly. That's true for a lot of nurseries. The acclimatization part is something that is so important. And I think that for anybody picking up a plant, whether it's from a big box store or a specialty nursery or greenhouse or garden center or wherever it may be, the important thing to kind of notice is that like the plant is probably going to look a little different when you actually get it home and you have it growing in your home for like 2, 3, 4, 5, you know, weeks afterwards. Mm-hmm. And it's largely because we might not be giving it the same conditions that it had in the greenhouse or the garden center. So I've had plants that lose like half of their leaves when they get indoors after a certain while, or get a lot stemmier, or might have been over-fertilized because I'm not giving them all the light that they probably had when they were growing in the greenhouse. So this is just to kind of manage the expectations of someone who might be, you know, purchasing a plant, which we all do. And we all kind of recognize that they could sometimes grow a lot different. And sometimes that growth structure could be charming. And sometimes it could be like, you know, to the standpoint where you're just like, I can't even have that in my house anymore. I actually went back home to my dad's house, and he's growing a lot of house plants now. And his girlfriend was mentioning this Diffenbachia, and Diffenbachia is a typical plant that gets very stemmy. It gets like this long cane, and you could easily cut it down and kind of put it back into soil and make it a little bit bushier again. But it is a type of plant that over time doesn't necessarily always look great. And so I thought that was kind of funny, because I think that these are things that, you know, we start to recognize as we bring plants home, and they may look a certain way, and then all of a sudden they don't.
No, totally. I feel like for me, I've certainly brought some philodendron, some Tradescantia that come home and they're so lush and so bushy and their leaves are so close together. And then I bring them home and obviously they're not in the same light, especially this one, Tradescantia. Tradescantia.
You said it right the first time. Yeah, Tradescantia.
I always trip myself over that. But I've never been able to get one to grow as like full and lush and with the leaves close together. Like they always get more leggy in my home. And that's just something I've had to come to terms with, unless I stick it under one of my grow lights and then I can make it work.
Yeah, that is prime real estate for probably another plant. And because it is a plant that actually doesn't look bad, like I have a Tradescantia right now that's like kind of trailing. And again, it's not same as yours, like the internodes are quite long. And that one I think is like, for me, it's fine looking that way, even though I know, totally. Like just like you, that it could be bushier. But yeah, I mean, let's dive a little bit more deeply into this. And this is something that I love to talk about, because, you know, one of the things that really attracts us to plants are their leaves. And I think that a lot of houseplant enthusiasts now, they don't really go for, and much different than people who are like planting plants outside, which often go for bedding plants and plants with flowers, is like houseplant enthusiasts really love leaves. And I think that's a really great place to start.
Yeah.
Observing plants, and also whether the plant actually has leaves or not. You know, in the case of a cacti, in most cases, you know, those are just, you know, stems. And so, you know, those types of things, the lack of leaves or the types of leaves, you know, whether they are thick and rubbery or whether they're, you know, coriaceous or have these like ripples, you know, whether they're really thin and whether they're dark green or they're light green or they have like a different coloration or they're variegated. All these things kind of tell us a little bit more about the plant. Even the growth structure, you know, whether it is trailing down or a climbing plant, whether it is like more like a hanging or pendant plant, whether it's bushy, whether it's, you know, spreading, if it's entirely upright. You know, I love observing and kind of looking at specific plants, you know, from that perspective, just to kind of observe how they're growing and start to intuit maybe what kind of place that they've come from. And if you think about plants, like they're smart in their own way, you know, much in the same way that we've developed, like, why are our ears cupped, you know, a little bit, you know, in order to be able to get sound, you know, why do we have eyelashes, you know, well, maybe that helps like keep out dust and dirt. So our bodies, you know, over time have evolved to be, you know, these efficient things. And we probably, and maybe in the case of the appendix, we don't use the appendix any longer, but our own kind of structures have a purpose to serve. And so we should naturally think that like the plant has a specific kind of leaf or specific kind of stem or is it growing in a certain kind of way in order to have some sort of purpose. Does that make sense?
Totally, totally. Are there some general guidelines with, okay, if the leaf is bright pink, that's going to indicate something. If the leaf is waxy, that's going to indicate something. Can we kind of do some larger groups of something that we might observe?
Yeah. So a great one to kind of maybe start with is the leaf very succulent or is the stem succulent if it doesn't have leaves? Is it a very succulent leaf versus is it a very thin leaf?
And succulent meaning?
Succulent meaning like it's thick, that it probably, if you touch it, it has like, you know, you don't feel like you're going to rip it or break it or poke a hole in it or anything along those lines. So it's juicy. You know what I mean?
It has the ability to store water.
Yeah, exactly. Those two things to me already kind of put plants in different groupings. And if you have a thin-leaved plant, and again, this is so general because this is not true for all cases, but if you have a very thin-leaved plant, that plant is going to lose water probably much more quickly than a plant that has like a water storage unit in it, which is like a more succulent leaf. So if you're somebody who tends to underwater or is not always around, then maybe getting one of those thin-leaved varieties that loses water pretty quickly might not actually be a plant for you. Thin-leaf variety plants often, you know, come in a little bit more of a humid condition because they need a little bit more of that water. So they never developed like a thick leaf, you know, so to speak, in order to kind of maintain the water because they probably haven't been in drought-like conditions. And again, it just goes back to like, here's a succulent leaf that has a water storage unit and could probably stand, you know, drying out a little bit. So those are things that I kind of like to observe. And I'll give you a great example, like Calathea. A lot of people love Calathea for the coloration, you know, for the markings that they have, the fact that they go up and down at night. And it kind of has that, you know, the idea of like, for those of, who are unfamiliar with Calathea, they're in the Marantaceae family, which is like a prayer plant. So, you know, oftentimes they fold up as if they're in prayer. And people love those types of things. You know, they look so beautiful. But, you know, for a houseplant, those could be very challenging, especially for a first-time houseplant person or even somebody who's well-seasoned. I've lost, you know, plenty of Calathea in my time if I didn't like have them in a more terrarium-like condition. And it goes back to kind of like, even though they're, you know, they're a low light plant, which we kind of will get into, if you don't have the right kind of humidity, or if you're letting it dry out too much, then those plants will probably crisp up very readily. Whereas if you had something that's a little bit more succulent variety, and you were able to have enough light in your home, then, you know, perhaps that is something that's a little bit like easier for you to handle.
Yeah, I love that. What comes just to mind is I'm thinking about like the extremely delicate leaves of my prayer plant, my Maranta, and my nail could easily like pierce through that leaf. It's so thin, like probably not even pressing very hard on it. But my Peperomia, I love Peperomia. They're so hardy, are somewhat succulent. Those leaves are so much sturdier that if I was to press my nail into that leaf with the same press of the Maranta leaf, it probably wouldn't break the skin. Not that you should be like pressing your nails into leaves at garden centers, but kind of that like rule of thumb, thinking about the leaf thickness. That's really helpful.
Yes. I mean, and maybe you're just thinking about pressing your nails into the leaves because of your cat's thing that you're doing.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm on tour with cats.
So I think I'm thinking about like scratching my leaves. But yeah,
I'm slowly turning into a cat.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. No, but you're right. You could imagine it. And Peperomia is a great middle ground because if I'm thinking of like a really, you know, maybe succulent leaf, like if you're going with a graptopetalum or a sedum, like, you know, a true kind of succulent.
Or something. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then if you have on the other end, you have your Maranta and you have your Calathea, which is like a much more thinly variety, which, you know, you'd probably find on like forest floors and very humid conditions. The coloration will give an indication that it's probably an understory plant because it might be darker. It might have like colorations like purple and red, which we'll kind of get into. And then you had mentioned Peperomia, which is a really good like middle ground plant because a lot of Peperomia fall into that semi-succulent category. So they're not quite like super succulent depending on the Peperomia, and they're not quite like thin-leaved, although you do find Peperomia in each of those categories. And again, that should like give you an indication that they may grow a little bit differently than other ones within its genus. But Peperomia is a one that I treat more as like a succulent because of the semi-succulent variations to Peperomia. And they might have like a cuticle, which is really the upper layer of the plant, and it might be a little waxy. And that waxy cuticle, and again, if you had like wax on your face, you know, you think about this for a minute, your pores breathe. And if you all of a sudden like waxed over your whole face, your skin would have trouble maybe breathing a little bit or losing any kind of water or anything along those lines. So that's really what the waxy cuticle on a leaf will say is like, oh, I'm kind of protecting the water within within this leaf structure, you know, and I might even bounce some light back. If the cuticle is like kind of got a grayish or whitish sheen, it might even be capable of actually bouncing light back. So again, it's this plant protecting its water. And that would, as a houseplant enthusiast, again, that would indicate to me, well, you know, maybe this is something that doesn't require like constant watering. So if you're kind of like a low maintenance, like houseplant person, starting to like observe these little elements of a plant are going to help you determine maybe perhaps which plant is going to be best for your home.
I love that. So we have, first off, observe the leaves, observe their thickness, if they maybe have that waxy cover. And then I love something you mentioned, the color. Let's talk about leaf color, because that was something that kind of blew my mind when I first learned about it as well.
Yeah, so coloration of leaves, and I think that this is something that we have to kind of, some folks in the houseplant market, a lot of breeders and growers of plants will often choose plants that may not natively look that way in their native environments, but they might, a sport might happen or something that is a color deviation from a plant. Like the variegation is like, is very popular, as you know, and could drive up prices within plants like very, very quickly. But sometimes some of the variegation that we see typically isn't what you would find in the outdoor environments in some cases. And when you actually start to see some of these colors on leaves, it might lead you astray because maybe that plant is purple, but is not necessarily purple in its native environment. And so this is where sometimes observational skills will, you know, may kind of lead you astray. But again, as you start to kind of like learn more about plants and see a wider plethora of plants, you could start to kind of intuit. And if you look at plants, like plants are mainly green. And you know that we have plants that are like maybe, you know, almost like pastel-y colored all the way down to like a really, really dark green. And that is just kind of the amount and how much like chlorophyll is packed into the leaf in some cases. And mm-hmm. sometimes the different colors of leaves are caused by, you know, things like called anthocyanins, which, you know, could give us like the reds or the purples or the orange or the yellows, carotenoids as well. These are the things that we kind of learn about if like you're in a nutrition course and you're like, oh, these pigments are great for you. You know, orange carrots, great for your eyesight. Like these are things that we kind of hear in those kinds of contexts, but mm-hmm. not necessarily always in the plant context. And, you know, those colors have a role as well. You know, those pigments have a role as well within plants, but they could also help us deduce maybe a little bit more of what, like, what kind of environment that plant has been growing in or grew in when it was in its native habitat. So if I have a really dark leaved variety, and let's just take, like, for those who are familiar, and maybe you put links to these up, like a gasteria or haworthia, which is actually a succulent plant, but they usually are a little bit of a darker green than most succulents. Mm-hmm. And these are a really good example because these are particular succulents that you could easily pull away from. When you see it, hear succulents, most people are like, oh yeah, south or western window, that kind of stuff. They grow really well. They can handle light. Well, why is that? Well, it's because they have succulent leaves. Their leaves might be a little bit more pastel-y colored, you know, because like white reflects back the light. So it's protecting this plant. But then you have some succulents that have this like really dark green, like a haworthia or like a gasteria. And that would immediately tell me that that's a type of plant that I could actually probably pull away from direct light. It might be able to handle it, but because it has like more chlorophyll in it, it's better at being able to extract light from maybe a further distance because it has more chlorophyll. So it's like as if you had more solar panels packed into a smaller place, you'd probably be able to grab more of that sunlight rather than if they were like spaced out more. And that's kind of how I would view it. And the same kind of goes for a plant, whether it's a thin-leaved variety, whether it's semi-succulent, whether it's succulent, like the gasteria and haworthia that I'd mentioned. Usually that darker green of plant would tell me that that is something that I could probably have a little bit more into the interior of my space and maybe not necessarily directly up against a window. Whereas if I find a plant that maybe is a little lighter in color, if it's variegated, if it, you know, has a woolly appearance. A woolly appearance often is something that will protect the plant from too much light, you know, whether it's hitting that leaf or, you know, whether it's trying to reflect back. And a common example that I give people is like anybody who skis, I don't ski, but anybody who skis, I would always remember seeing my friends come back and I'm like, oh, did you just go to the beach? And they're like, no, I was skiing, but they didn't wear sunscreen. And when they're on top of the mountain and that light is bouncing back off of that white color of the snow or the ice,
you're going to get burnt.
You're going to get burned. And that's exactly kind of what happens with the plant. It's just like using it as a reflection. So you kind of get this sense now that as you start to just walk into a store and just take a moment and don't even grab for, you know, what that plant is, but just kind of like take a breath, take a moment, and just look at the plant and observe it and just try to create a story around that plant of what, even if you're wrong, like it doesn't matter if you're wrong or right. It's just about practicing the skill of being able to intuit maybe a little bit more of where that plant has come from. Why does it grow that way? Like, again, going back to like, why do we have eyebrows? Why do we have eyelashes? Why are our ears like little cupped? Why do we have opposable thumbs? You know, all those things are developed, you know, over time for to enable the human. So, you know, how are these things kind of enabling plants to survive in the environments that they're in?
Yeah, I love that. I want to just go over a few of the things that you said so I can make sure I got them right.
Sure.
So I like the idea of being able to kind of look at the color of the plants and kind of try and figure out, get at least somewhat of an idea of what kind of light they need. So you're saying if it's a very dark green, like say a philodendron Mikan's, or maybe the dark green of a philodendron Brazil, or like the normal heart shape leaf philodendron, those are going to be super dark green. So they're going to have lots of chlorophyll. So they can probably withstand that lower light.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I wouldn't even see some of the, you know, the ones that you had mentioned there, I wouldn't even think that those are like super dark green. Like there's ones that are almost like black. You know, they look black. But like, I would say that in the kind of full spectrum of, you know, plantness, I would say, yeah, those fall. If like a zero is like very light colored and 10 is really dark, I would maybe put them as a 6 or something along those lines. Yeah.
And then I love that with that example of the Haworthia, you know, because we know we need to be looking for whether or not leaves are succulent or not. So you're going to see that Haworthia, you're going to know that it's more of a succulent plant. You'd think succulents need to be in bright light, but then you can deduce because the leaves are so dark, it's probably going to be in the succulent arena, a lower light option. So that's cool. I love knowing that. So an indication that a plant could necessarily need more light is if it would be one of those, you know, succulents that are bright pink, or, you know, a succulent that has some of those gorgeous colors we all see, that I'm certainly seeing a lot in California. If it maybe has like a woolly appearance, that's so interesting that it's the woolly appearance is to protect it from the sun. And then variegated, because in general, variegated plants need to be in a higher light situation. Is that true?
Yes, because if you think about it, and in some cases, I know I go way more in depth with this in the masterclass, but in some cases that variegation is unnatural and there's no chloroplasts in those places. In some cases there may be, it just may be the same amount, but maybe there's like a layer on top that makes it look a little pale, like another epidermal layer on top that makes it look pale and the chlorophyll's like deeper into the leaf. But in a lot of the variegation species that we see that are like white, and then they have like green also, there's no chlorophyll in that white leaf. It's almost like an albino, if you will. And so the plant is relying on the green parts of that plant in order to be able to survive, which is why like a lot of people, they might have 24 hours to take a picture of their all white leaf, but pretty soon it's going to start probably browning along the edges because that leaf is in many cases is likely unfit compared to its green varieties.
Yeah. It can't make any food for itself, poor guy.
Exactly. So it's starving, or it's kind of stealing its food from its, like, its brothers and sisters on the same plant. So, but if you have ones that you had mentioned pink, you know, in some cases you're out in California, you might see a great example, Kalanchoe pink butterflies, or you have like some echeverias that are like really beautiful rosy colors and things along those lines. And we talked about like anthocyanins. A lot of times those come out to help protect the plant, much in the same way that melanin and skin would help protect the plant. But oftentimes they're like a lighter shade and or a more pastel-y color, and you see pastel purples and blues and like pinks, and a lot of succulents, you know, have those types of colorations and usually a little bit lighter in coloration. And again, it goes back to kind of similar that like skiing on top of the slope example of like being able to protect, you know, the plant. And you'd mentioned the woolly leaves, and there's other reasons why like plants could be woolly, but that's another great example that yes. And one of those ways you could start to intuit like, oh, you know, maybe that is like helping protect it, much in the same way that if you had like a woolly coat or something along those lines, and it could be like a woolly coat to protect it from severe cold. It could be a woolly coat to protect it from, you know, the sun hitting down on it. It could be kind of a woolly coat to, in order to be able to collect mist, in order to be able to get water down to its roots, because it's like in such a desert condition. There's all sorts of different things. And as you start to kind of recognize these structures, you start to say, oh, this is so cool. I could read a plant without even looking at the tag.
I love it. Any other big indicators you feel like would be helpful for us?
I think the one that I mentioned before with Calathea is a great example. Oftentimes, you know, people love those plants because they have like a contrasting bottom. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes like contrasting bottoms, they're, you know, contrasting in order to be able to have a second chance for light to kind of bounce back up into the leaf. So oftentimes with things
that was my favorite thing I learned in the houseplant masterclass.
It's really lovely to see, you know, to be able to all of a sudden start to see, oh, these colors have a purpose besides the fact that like makes me want to buy them because they're cool to be in my house because I like the contrasting bottoms. Like, yeah, you know, as you start to see the intuition and like the natural, you know, intelligence that these, you know, these plants have, you begin to really, at least for me, maybe I'm just speaking on my behalf, but it makes me really appreciate them. The fact that, you know, they've evolved over time, and it encourages me as a person to be like, oh, how can I, you know, how can I give them the best environment? You know, with my Calatheas, with my Marantas, can I give them a little bit higher humidity? Can I pull them back a little bit more from my light so they're not like curling their leaves or getting brown tips or anything along those lines? And once you start to like know that, then you could actually, I think, become a much more proficient houseplant owner.
Are there any indications between if it has like one stalk versus many, more of like a bushier appearance, like many different smaller stems? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think sometimes it goes into the growing conditions. So, you know, if you have the same way that if like a plant is, and this is just like what I would guess, you know, the same way that if a plant has really tight internodes, it was probably given a lot of overhead light and around the light so that it kind of grows in a really bushy fashion. But if you're a plant, for instance, that has like put out like one very long stem and then starts to put leaves on the top, it might actually be reaching. But if you're talking about like a tree, for instance, a lot of times trees and certain shrub-like plants will have like predetermined crown structure, if you will. So they might have like a globular crown. They might have like a flat-topped crown. They might be, some shrubs grow directly from the base. You know, some, you know, trees will grow up from in the top. You know, if you think about like an evergreen tree, they're a little bit more conical. So in some cases, it might actually be the way that those trees are designed for a certain environment that they have, or it might be a situation where if that tree or that plant is generally pretty stemmy, and then you only have, you see one that is only growing like one long little thing, then it might have been a condition of like the lighting that you had been, you know, giving it, for instance. So that goes back to, I think, what we were talking about before, whereby if you bring it home, it might not start looking like the same kind of structure or growth structure that when you brought it home to begin with. 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks down the line, you might see that it gets a lot stemmier and starts putting effort into maybe one of their stems as opposed to all of their stems if it's really trying to reach for light, for example.
Okay, cool. Speaking of learning all of these fun facts about plants, I want to talk about your masterclass because I had so much fun completing it. I'm a graduate of the Houseplant Masterclass.
An alum.
And I just want to say thank you for making such an amazing resource for us. It's unbelievable what you've done.
Thank you for saying that. And I think that, you know, for me, it was, you know, writing is super cathartic and it's also like really helpful. And one of the things that I saw or that I felt like was kind of missing in this houseplant world was something like the Houseplant Masterclass, because you can actually find a lot about growing houseplants online, more so than ever. And that's not always a good thing because it could be even more confusing when you have so many resources. And so there wasn't really a place that like any, I think anybody could go where you could really learn from soup to nuts. And the course actually, you know, it's disseminated over the course of about a month. You know, life happens and like people work and everything like that. So, you know, a lot of times people like feel like they're falling behind. So this one I tried to, you know, gradually disseminate. And the first part of it is really getting, you know, putting plants in their place, like over history and how plants actually work. So it might touch a little bit more of biology up front, but then I really try to get into all the different kinds of conditions that plants, like let's talk about light, let's talk about watering, let's talk about humidity, and really touch upon that so that people can learn about houseplants from soup to nuts. I mean, you could learn about garden design, you could learn about permaculture online, but there wasn't really that kind of like comprehensive place to learn about plants. I think that's like what I really wanted to achieve with the Houseplant Masterclass. And then people could read through it. There's an audio component. In some cases, there's visual components. There's a lot of imagery. There's probably, I think I have like well over, you know, 300 or 400 images like within the masterclass. So it gives people a lot of opportunity to really like sit with the content and learn about it. And again, not just from a memorization point, but from a point of like, how can I observe and how can I apply this like in my home, for instance?
Yeah, I found like, number one, I wished, I mean, if only, I probably wouldn't have had to make Bloom and Grow Radio if I had your masterclass when I started, because if you're a beginner, like it's the perfect resource to really learn about your plants. But for me, as someone who's now had plants for a few years, I've read tons of blogs, I've interviewed tons of people. It was such a beautiful way to fill in the blanks for me. Because you really do go from the over, you know, general information, you do the history, but then you go into light, water, a whole section on humidity, a whole section on growing medium. And I found that I knew bits and pieces of each section, but there was so much that I didn't know, or like the underlying scientific information that backed, yeah, I know this plant needs bright light, but then you got into like photosynthesis. And I remember like I would listen to the sections sometimes two or three times because they were so packed with info. Like it was such a cool way to absorb.
Yeah, that's great. And I think that the scientific part was like a big one for me. I mean, coming from the world of science, I never wanted it to be too sciencey, but I also wanted to provide places like everything that I have is generally referenced. If I give like a stat or something that is like a nice juicy little statistic, I want people to be able to trace that back. And I think that's one of the things that is often lacking in houseplants, because there isn't much like peer-reviewed science. Like a lot of times people repurpose information and you don't know where you get it. But so I think it was, for me, it was the combination of like, you know, I have like, I just did a new inventory and I have like a little over 550 different types of species of plants in my home. So it's like between that experience of growing those plants and then growing the experience of speaking with other growers, which, you know, you're getting the experience of as well, like with talking with people with Bloom and Grow Radio and learning how other people do things. And then plus the science journals. I think that for me is like, you know, where Houseplant Masterclass really for me shines is for people to see that there's information that's also backed up, but through the kind of experience of growing as well as through something that might be like peer reviewed, if you will, in the scientific
and also
literature.
All the additional, you know, your botanical Latin appendix and all of the appendixes that you offer too. Like there's just, it's so much information. I'm so excited to have it as a resource and to be able to go back to it. And it was really a lovely month too, where I would wake up in the morning. You can only listen to a few sections get released a day. So I would wake up in the morning, I'd have my coffee essentially with you for 20 minutes and I'd learn something new about my plants in that 20 minutes. I listened almost like my morning meditation before I like looked at my phone or before I did anything. I would just like sit with my coffee with you and learn about plants. It was a really nice way to wake up and start the day.
That's wonderful to hear that that's, you know, how you're using it. Because for me, you know, I know like with plants, especially, I sometimes want to dive right in and eat it all up at once. But I think the challenge with that, and this is something that I will be looking at, like as I get more data points from people giving, you know, surveys from the Houseplant Masterclass, is like, I don't want people to like gloss over the information. I really do want people to like sit with it. And like, you know, even we do have observational exercises and it's like, you know, take your time out after that coffee, go to the subway and like maybe notice a plant that you haven't noticed before and start to observe it. And that observation doesn't always happen just at one day. It happens over the course of like many, many days. And so it really is about, you know, I think for the person who gets the most out of the course, it's really about taking that information. And again, not just like memorizing it, but kind of internalizing
it. Absorbing it.
Yeah.
You have to absorb it and really sit with it because there's so much information too.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to hear that you had a good time with it. And that's the thing with the masterclass, it's yours to keep. And I will be updating the masterclass on a more than regular basis, especially as more and more people go through it and fill out the survey and give me like feedback. I mean, that's how I form everything, I think, in life, including the YouTube channel and everything. I always just try to get as much feedback as possible so that it could actually be useful for people.
Totally. And I liked it so much. I've become an affiliate of your program. The link for if you guys are interested in taking the class, I can't encourage you more to. I really enjoyed it so much. You can go to the show notes and the link for the masterclass will be there. Anything else you want to share about it?
No, I think that's it. I think you hit upon a lot of the important points and I really appreciate it.
And where can we go to find all things Homestead Brooklyn too?
You could go to homesteadbrooklyn.com. There's a link to the Houseplant Masterclass there, but you could go to houseplantmasterclass.com or your link in the show notes. And I would just say, yeah, the YouTube channel, you could click to the YouTube channel, Plant One On Me through the Homestead Brooklyn website.
Yeah. The best. All right. Well, thank you so much, Summer Rain, for being with me today.
Thank you, Maria. I had such a great time.
Thank you, Summer Rain, as always, for just a wonderful chat. I'm always so thankful when she gives me her time to come on and talk with me. I hope this conversation might help you, plant friends, zoom out and understand these more general clues we can take to understanding plant care and not just relying solely on that care card, because the longer I'm having plants, the more I'm realizing how personalized your home's environment can be and how sometimes that care card is giving you a general idea of what the care should be. And maybe it's going to differ a little bit in your home. And it's our job to kind of understand the underlying factors going into plant care instead of just looking at a card and doing exactly what it says. For me, I'm finding that it's a lot more empowering for me to have these general ideas and be able to deduce and then use the plant care cards for extra support and clarification than to just kind of give all the power away to these external sources giving me the prescription for whatever light and care it needs. Do you know what I'm saying, plant friends? If you're looking to take your plant care knowledge to the next level, I really highly recommend Summer Rain's Houseplant Masterclass course. I really enjoyed taking it for the month that I did, waking up a little bit earlier, doing bit by bit every morning with my coffee. Like I said in our interview, it really filled in the gap in my plant care knowledge and really feel like it just empowered me in such an awesome way. So my affiliate code is in the show notes. That means that a portion of the sale will actually go to supporting Bloom and Grow Radio so you can grow your planty knowledge while also supporting the podcast at the same time. So you can go to the show notes to get that link. Thank you so much to Mountain Crest Gardens for sponsoring this episode. Plant friends, I love Mountain Crest Gardens. I'm obsessed with the succulents they sent me. They are so awesome. If you're looking for high quality succulents shipped to your door in the growing season or 365 days a year, check out mountaincrestgardens.com/bloom to get your discount code for 15% off your first purchase. Like I said, the variety of the succulents they have is unbelievable, and their shipping and packaging is incredible. Go give them a look at mountaincrestgardens.com/bloom for your 15% off coupon code. Okay, plant friends, until next week, keep blooming and keep growing. Plant friends, thank you so much for tuning in today. If you like what you heard, make sure you are subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. And while you're making sure you're subscribed, why don't you head on over to the review section of whatever podcast player you're tuning into and leave us a review. I would greatly appreciate it. If you want to join the Bloom and Grow Garden Club, head over to bloomandgrowradio.com/garden-club to join the planty fun. When you join, you get a free download of the Keep Blooming print that Molly Mansfield made exclusively for us, and you will also get an email with the password to the private Facebook group, which is what I like to call the plantiest corner of the internet. It is pretty amazing. For behind-the-scenes scoop, plant tips I learn along the way, and sneak peeks of future episodes, follow me on Instagram at Bloom and Grow Radio. And plant friends, I'm here for you. So drop me a line if you have an idea for an episode, live event, or maybe if you're a planty business looking to sponsor the show. I am always here to help you keep blooming and keep growing.